is from Daniel chapter 5, verses 1 through 6. Belshazzar the king made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of 1,000. While he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple which had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple of the house of God, which had been here in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. In the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his hips were loosened, and his knees knocked against each other.
Good morning. There must be something about Thanksgiving week that my body doesn't like. Last year I had COVID. This year I've had a really, really bad cold that's knocked me down. Brother Jim called me yesterday to get the Bible reading, but also semi-concerned that I might not be here. But I told him I would, but I'll be coughing throughout the morning, I'm sure, so please just bear with me. All right, I'm going to this morning continue our series of lessons based upon phrases that we find in the Bible. I'd mentioned that most of them I'm going to focus on were ones that, you know, weren't very obvious. And while I was researching this particular phrase, I did find that it's generally thought that most people who know this phrase, the handwriting on the wall, really do not have any idea where it came from. It's just a phrase that you hear used, you know, maybe not every day, but regularly people do use it. And, you know, it'll be something like, I took my car into the shop and the mechanic came back into the waiting room with the part in his hand and the handwriting was on the wall. I needed a new whatever. Or you are applying for a job or you have an interview but you never hear back. Well, the handwriting's on the wall. I'm not going to be getting that job. That's generally how the phrase is used today. And like I said, from what I had read and learned, that really most people were surprised or, you know, have no idea that this is what this phrase is from. It's found in Daniel chapter 5 in what Brother Jim just read for us. And we'll look at how it was used and what it represents. And more importantly, at the end, we'll look at how we can benefit from this handwriting on the wall. There is actually quite a bit of secular history around this event. I could have gone on for 15 minutes this morning just on the historical impact that this had. While this is a biblical account, a biblical story, it took place in the larger non-religious world. This was a transfer of power from one line, you know, one ruling country into the Medo-Persian Empire. This was very noteworthy. This was not something that, you know, just happened, and the Bible took down what happened and spread it out, you know, through the writings. This is written a lot about because of the historical significance. We even know the date on which it took place. It was October 12th in the year 539 BC. Take that for what it's worth, but I pardon me, I did find that in my research, and based upon just other non religious and secular writers. That is what is known. And it was a turning point kind of in world history. The Babylonian Empire fell to the Medo-Persian Empire. At this point in history, King Nebuchadnezzar had been gone for 25 years. As we know, he had a kind of a back and forth relationship with God, but ultimately he respected and knew that God was Lord, and through Daniel, he had come to that realization. But by the time we get to Daniel chapter 5, like I said, he's been gone for 25 years, and there have been several other kings that have come in and gone out of power. But at this point in time, Daniel is probably in his 80s, based upon the historical time frame. But one thing we know is that he's obviously not involved with the current king, Belshazzar. He is not consulting with him. He is not advising the king in any way, shape, or form. Now, at this time, there were kind of two different kings that were looking over Babylon. There was King Nabonidus, who was a son-in-law of Nebuchadnezzar, and also by Nebuchadnezzar's son, Belshazzar. What we know about Nabonidus was that he was a very wicked man. He did not consult or consider the Lord or anything that his father-in-law Nebuchadnezzar had done so. But we do know at this point, on this October 12th date, that he was no longer in power. It was thought that he had gone out to meet the invading army led by Cyrus the Great, who was the Persian king. And while history doesn't necessarily record what happened to him, he is thought to have been lost or taken capture. And at this particular time, he was not there in the city. King Belshazzar is, though, in the city. And while it's under siege, we're told that there was a large invading force there. From the basis of what Jim read for us this morning, he decides to hold a great party. Now, this shows a lot of arrogance. His city's under siege, and he's in there celebrating and having a party. But from an archaeological standpoint, what has been learned about the city of Babylon was that the walls of the city were 85 feet thick. They said chariots could ride 3 abreast with no problem, you know, with plenty of room to spare. So this was a large structure. Now, this seems a bit extreme, but it certainly could. The Babylon Empire had been around for a while. They said the walls of the city were basically 4 square, and they are each 15 miles long. That seems big, but it certainly could be the case. And they said each wall had 25 brass gates. So a lot of entry points into the city, but with being brass and so forth, they were fortified as well. They said there were moats that were around different parts of the city, and there were 25 guard towers around the perimeter of the city as well. Now, the key thing that plays into what our story doesn't mention, but as we know historically how it happened, the Euphrates River entered into the city wall and flowed under the city wall, starting from the northwest down to the southeast. So it kind of went a diagonal across the city. And King Belshazzar didn't know, but the Persian Empire, or the Persian army, had been looking for a way to divert the flow of water of the Euphrates River, thus draining the river, allowing easy access under the wall. That's historically, we know that's how it happened, but we're not told any of that in this account. So he was very arrogant. He had much pride in himself, and that led him to throw this party in the face of his brother-in-law had just gone missing, didn't know what happened to him. The city was in peril. He wasn't taking the steps to figure out that something was going on. He didn't have scouting going on. He didn't know what was going to happen to him, and he's enjoying himself having a big party. So if we can learn anything from this, is that don't be as arrogant as King Belshazzar. It came back to topple him. We also learned that there was a lot of drinking going on, at least 5 references to drinking in just these few verses. It could explain why King Belshazzar made some of the decisions he made, and one of the decisions he made was to bring out the utensils and some of the items that Nebuchadnezzar had brought back to Babylon that had come out of the temple. He starts to use these gold and silver vessels, and instead of setting them apart to worship God, he used these vessels to praise the human-made gods out of stone and wood and so forth. He was taking these holy emblems, dedicated and set aside for worship to the true God, and he's using them to worship his own gods. So it wasn't that he was arrogant enough just to have this party in the face of everything that was confronting the city. He's insulting God himself by using these vessels. So when this takes place after this final insult, the fingers of a man's hand write a message on the wall, and immediately there is a change to his countenance. We're told that his color changed, his thoughts alarmed him, said his limbs gave way and his knees knocked together. The prototypical, when you think of someone being scared in a cartoon, you see them there with their knees knocking. That's King Belshazzar right now. A disembodied hand with fingers writing on the wall. Now I want to read Daniel 5, 7 through 12. The king called loudly to bring in the enchanters, the Chaldeans, and the astrologers. The king declared to the wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and shows me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king the interpretation. Then King Belshazzar was greatly alarmed, and his color changed, and his lords were perplexed. The queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banqueting hall, and the queen declared, "O king, live forever. Let not your thoughts alarm you or your color change. There is a man in your kingdom of whom is the spirit of the holy gods. In the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, enchanters, Chaldeans, and astrologers, because an excellent spirit, knowledge, and understanding to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve problems were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation." The king obviously was shaken by this, and he brings in all his men, all his different diviners and people that he relied upon to guide him, and they're useless. Now, I think it's interesting, we're not told anything about who the queen was or anything about her, but she obviously had been paying attention at some point in the past, because she immediately knew, well, this is a job for Daniel. Daniel has helped Nebuchadnezzar in the past. You, king, have ignored him, or, you know, we don't know where Daniel had been and what his living conditions, what his situation was, but she remembered, and she advises the king to bring him in. And so Daniel is brought in, and Belshazzar tells him that if he can interpret the writing, all the same rewards will be given to him. And Daniel does turn the reward down. His services, the services that he's able to provide because of the glory and, you know, everything that God has put in him, is never for sale. It's never something could be bought. It's like Philip in Acts chapter 8, or not Philip, when the apostles come down and start laying on hands after Philip the evangelist had spread the word, Simon the sorcerer wanted to buy that power, and he was rebuked for that. The same thing here. God's power is never for sale. And so he was not interested in also in tweaking the message to, you know, to not frighten or startle the king. Daniel was going to tell him and was determined to tell him the truth. So if we read here in chapter 5, verses 18 through 21, "O king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, kingship and greatness and glory and majesty. And because of the greatness that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and tongues trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he killed, and whom he would, he kept alive. Whom he would, he raised up, and whom he would, he humbled. But when his heart was lifted up, and his spirit was hardened, so that he dealt proudly,
He was brought down from his kingly throne, and his glory was taken from him. He was driven from among the children of mankind, and his mind was made like that of a beast. And his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. He was fed grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, until he knew that the Most High God rules the kingdom of mankind and sets over it whom he will. Nebuchadnezzar was widely respected, but because of his pride, Daniel clearly points out that that pride led him to this fall, the situation where he was living as a wild animal. I didn't look this up. I think it was 7 years was the time frame that we're given. Correct me later if that's wrong, but I think it was a long time that he lived this way until he finally was humbled enough to realize that his power and his glory was given to him because of God. So then Daniel had given this history lesson. He had brought to the remembrance of Belshazzar, very likely was alive when this happened. He would have known this occasion. And Daniel then connects Nebuchadnezzar's situation with Belshazzar's situation. So verses 22 and 23 reads, "And his son Belshazzar have not humbled your heart, though you knew all this, but you have lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven. And the vessels of his house have been brought in before you, and you and your lords, your wives, and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which you do not see, or hear, or know. But the God in whose hand is your breath, and whose are all your ways, you have not honored." And so the message of repentance that Daniel had preached decades, years earlier to Nebuchadnezzar now has to be repeated again to this next generation. After making this connection, the prophet Daniel then reads and interprets the message. And I saw someone say it was almost like Daniel was reading the verdict as a jury foreman. He was reading out what had been judged against him. And it's a I use the English Standard for all my translations and my scriptures that I put them, but I didn't like. It's not the traditional interpretation of this. I believe this is a King James. Many tekel upharsin, or tekel upharsin. The English Standard has it slightly differently. The first word is repeated, most likely for emphasis. Many. And this means measured. And so the king is being told, you've been measured, you've been numbered, you've been counted. In some way, shape, or form, he's being measured. Now, we have a lot of different forms of measurement today. Inches, feet, yards, these would have been something that he would have understood. But here, God is using a measurement not used by man to judge the king. God had measured and numbered King Belshazzar, and his days were definitely numbered. Tekel, the second word, refers to being weighed, and in that weighing, he was found lacking. Like the butcher putting his thumb on the scale, or just someone who is not trustworthy, the weight that came back was not a proper weight. He was lacking in that weight. And he came up short. According to verse 27, it said that that he had been weighed, and he was going to be judged by that. And finally, Daniel explained the meaning of the final word, upharsin, which means divided. Belshazzar's kingdom would be divided. It would be chopped up. It would be segmented. It would be given away to others. And between the Medes and the Persians, they would take over all of the Babylonian territory. We learn from the remainder of the chapter that all Daniel had said came to pass. Belshazzar died that very night, and his kingdom was given to Darius the Mede, at least initially. I'm sure it didn't go any further, but I'm guessing that Cyrus, the Persian, also took possession of some of this land as well. So it was a very simple message that was given. You've been measured, you've been weighed, and now you're going to be divided. He came up short in every area in which God judged him. Just as Belshazzar was judged in this, we also need to remember that every day we're being measured, we're being weighed, and the possibility of us being divided from our things and our family are always there. Now, Belshazzar was judged in a special way. Oh, sorry, he was not judged in a special way, but the way in which he was informed was a completely unique way. But just because we're not going to see a hand writing a message on a wall, and we have to have some help understanding what it meant, just because that isn't going to happen in our lives doesn't take away the fact that just like King Belshazzar, every one of us is being measured and weighed to make sure that we're not found lacking. And at some point, if we are found lacking, we will pay that price of eternal damnation. But if we are found faithful, if our measurement comes up true, and if God's scales work, and we are found to be in balance, then we will obtain a glorious home. And unfortunately, I neglected to look and see who had the closing prayer. Gary, I'll just call upon you if you don't mind, or unless you can see real fast. My apologies. Tommy will lead us in a closing prayer, and we'll be dismissed to our class.